Before we begin this episode, we just wanted to give a quick shout out to our friends at EastForged, an Australian small business specializing in cold brewed nitro tea. You can get 15% off your purchase using our code UA15 at their online store at eastforged.com.
So to give a bit of background about the awesome award-winning cold brew tea, we had a chat to one of the co-founders, Kim, and we were so inspired by her genuine drive in finding an exciting way to introduce people into the traditional Asian culture of tea brewing, whilst also providing a healthy alternative to normal iced teas that are packed with artificial sweeteners and flavours.
After trying it ourselves, we were dead set blown away about how unique the taste was and the drinking experience was. It has this like really silky smooth and foamy texture that's as refreshing as cracking a cold one with the boys, but also has the health benefits that you'd get from a cup of tea.
So have a try of it yourself. And as we said, visit eastforge.com with the code UA15 to get 15% off your purchase. There's heaps of different flavors to explore and it really hits different after you give it a few goes.
Thank you so much, EastForge, for continuing such a traditional part of our culture. We really hope you guys enjoy it, like it, and if you do, let us know what your favorite flavor is. Anyway, on to the episode. Welcome to Unapologetically Asian, the place where we talk about navigating through adulthood as Asian Australians. Today, you're joined by Twee,
Tiana,
and Diana.
Writer, producer, director, theatre maker, MC and performer, Diana Nguyen is a proud Vietnamese-Australian creative entrepreneur. Earlier this year, Diana was named the overall winner of the 40 Under 40 Most Influential Asian Australian Awards for her leadership, creativity and humour in shining a light on inclusion and diversity in contemporary Australia. With a resume that spans being a co-creator and executive producer of Fee & Me, the first ever Vietnamese-Australian comedy series, appearances on The Project and Q&A, a TED Talk speaker, and the host of her very own podcast called The Snortcast, Diana's drive and passion is incredibly infectious. Today, we chat to Diana about growing up Asian Australian, her journey into comedy and the arts, diversity in the industry, and Keanu Reeves. Here's the vivacious Diana Nguyen. But before we start, we just wanted to give a bit of a trigger warning that we will be making mention of domestic violence. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us on another episode of Unapologetically Asian. As you may have heard, we are actually Nguyen in it today. We are joined by another amazing Nguyen, and that is Diana. She is an actress, comedian, and works a lot behind the scenes as well. So we're so excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on. I've been telling you guys, I've been fanning and watching you grow. It's been fantastic. So congratulations.
Oh my gosh, no, thank you so much. Thank you. I think I remember the day that you followed us back and I was like, oh my God, it's Diana. Because I've seen you perform before and
yes.
It's just like the world's colliding.
I know, you saw me perform Kim Hoong at the charity event. I think it was for VSA.
Yeah. So for a bit of context to the listeners out there, when Tiana and I were part of VSA, the Vietnamese Student Association back in university, we were invited to a charity dinner. Honestly, sorry, I forgot what exactly the event was for, but Diana was there performing like a little like comedy gig. And I mean, that's when we first came across and like it was bloody hilarious. Freaking loved it. But yeah, it's crazy that now we get to actually like talk to you and, you know.
Yeah,
then full circle moment.
Yeah, it has.
Crazy.
And we're also not just joined by Diana, we're also joined by a very dark and tall man who you may know from movies such as John Wick and Speed. Yes, that's right. Keanu Reeves is in her in her camera view as we speak.
Ever since I got awarded the long award, top Asian under 40 Asian Australian influencer, Keanu Reeves has appeared in all media. So
that's freaking amazing.
Yeah, I was on the ABC and on Twitter, it went viral. This guy took a picture of me with Keanu behind me, but he couldn't see Keanu because he was in the dark. And someone was like, who is that scary person standing behind her? But yeah, we're all Keanu Reeves fans. We all are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And is that actually life size? So is that
Yeah.
So it's his height.
Yeah. So I have a show called Chasing Keanu Reeves for Comedy Festival this year, and I realised that I didn't have enough content about Keanu Reeves. So a week before the show opened, I just bought two life-size Keanu Reeves.
Where's the other one?
He's sleeping.
You lie next to him in bed every night. What a way. What a way to go to sleep. I'd sleep like a baby if I had Keanu sleeping next to me like that.
Yeah, lockdown must be going very well for you, Diana. Yeah. You're waking up to someone, you know,
his handsome face every day.
Oh yeah. Well, that photo isn't too handsome. He does look like he might shoot me because John Wick just kills so many people in the movie.
He kills everyone.
He does, but he's reliable. Think of it like that, you know. He's got your back, so no one's going to come after you.
Like, literally has my back, literally.
It's a cardboard cutout, guys, if you haven't picked up on that yet.
We'll take a photo later and we'll put it on Instagram just so you guys can have a visualization because it's one that you can't miss. It's beautiful. He actually is super nice. Have you guys seen a bunch of photos of him just on the subway reading? Like, he's just such an, or you know, just sitting at the park bench eating a sandwich.
Well, that's the cutout I have is him eating his sandwich.
Oh, my God. Wait, is that the one lying in bed with you?
Yes.
Of him eating his sandwich?
I'll bring it out later. I'll bring it out.
Please do.
She's just not afraid to get dirty in the bedroom, it would appear.
Breakfast in bed every day.
Oh. I love it. Yeah, that's morning glories, isn't it? So.
Well, that was quite the introduction. Now you know a lot about Diana and her character. But let's take it way back to the beginning, way back when. Diana, so with a lot of our episodes where we interview our guests, we really want to get to know what makes them who they are. And that's all about taking it back to the very beginning. So tell us about your experiences growing up as an Asian Australian.
Well, it's interesting that you asked me that because, you know, in the last 2 weeks, there's been controversy about Jessica Rowe, who's a white journalist who decided to interview Pauline Hanson on her podcast and put her on a platform. And it just triggered me because Pauline Hanson was part of me growing up and like she made me feel uncool to be Asian. So I grew up in Springvale. My parents are both Vietnamese refugees. I'm Diana, so named after Princess Diana. I've got two sisters who are Princess Anne and Princess Sarah Fergie. So you can find us on The Crown, season 4. And it was a tough childhood because my parents, they didn't know how to love each other post-Vietnam War. So we lived in a domestic violent home and I moved around a lot. And I do talk about how the arts saved my life during that time. So my mum put me into ballet class when I was 7 years old, when I went to a white school. We were moved around because of domestic violence. And I have to say, like, I'm so thankful that my mum put the arts into me because that's who I am now. I feel very grateful that my mum saw that. Like, you know, I know we make jokes that, you know, we're doctors and accountants, that's what they want. But I feel like the Vietnamese culture is quite lyrical. We're quite artistic. We're very poetic. I wish I knew how to speak Vietnamese very well because Vietnamese people speak so poetically from up in Hanoi, but down in Saigon, Ho Chi Minh.
it's a bit bogan.
It's bogan, you know. So it's interesting that when I was 11 years old, Pauline Hanson came around and my identity became fragmentized, if that's a word. It became broken. And in my 30s, I am still mourning that. And I think when I think about the last 2 weeks and I think about how Asian Australians aren't visible and, you know, getting the award was fantastic, but it was just a reminder that we aren't on mainstream. And that's why these awards are so important because it puts us up on a, you know, pedestal so that we can be seen. But unfortunately, and that's why I'm working really hard and that's why I'm so proud of you guys, is that we're working to be seen every day and an award isn't an award once a year isn't early enough. So, you know, kudos to you for doing what you do. And but yeah, anyway, yeah, I've had to really reconnect with what Vietnamese Australian is, or Vietnamese. And I've used my art form in my 20s and 30s, like writing my work, talking about the intergenerational conflict of growing Vietnamese Australian with a mum who didn't understand my art form, me not understanding who I was. And, you know, eventually in my mid-20s, you know, writing Fee and Me, and having my short story in Alice Pung's book, Growing Up Asian Australia, was those really big, you know, platforms for me to tell my story and to connect with other young people who felt disconnected to who they were. Yeah, so, yeah, Fee and Me was a massive milestone, and it's been like an 11-year journey. It's not an overnight sensation. I have aged well.
I was going to say, you do not look a day over 21.
Thank you, honey. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Say Asians don't raisin.
Yeah, that's it. But we, you know, we do get plumpy when we're in our 50s. So
once menopause hits, we're like, we drop like 20 centimetres. Like,
plumpy or juicy?
Ooh, I don't know. I love
you
it.
You could look at it that way.
Yes, do some Lizzo with that. I love it. Juicy, yes. Yes. But yeah, I've been very lucky that the arts has been my platform to articulate who I am as a Vietnamese Australian or Australian Vietnamese. And also now in my 30s, I'm articulating more what it's like to be a woman without the race, a woman who's looking for love, who wants to have a family, who wants to make money in an art form that tells us that we can't make money from. And so I call myself a creative entrepreneur, and which what you guys are, because you're juggling, you know, your full-time jobs and doing this. That's, you're an entrepreneur. You're creating and making new work. So, yeah, that's pretty much a nutshell, an origin story of me. Yeah.
No, thank you for sharing that with us. I can't imagine how hard it is to kind of talk about, like, the fact that you came from, like, a domestic violence background. Like, that's really, really tough to share with strangers, really. But interesting that you mentioned Pauline Hanson, because I think it was like last year Tiana and I interviewed Benjamin Law, and he mentioned her as well. So, you know, she definitely must have had like a terrible impact on many Asian Australians out there. So,
and she made Vietnamese Asian people visible by calling us out. There was no love. There was no, hey, Vietnamese people have contributed to our community. It was like, no, they're swarming. They're taking our jobs. And I, and you know what's really upsetting for me is that instead of me being proud that I was swarming and taking people's jobs at the age of 11, is that I decided the best way was to be like her, like to be white. And
yeah.
That's something I am mourning, but also fighting, and I try my best to promote Asian Australian artists. And that's why the top 40 was so fantastic, because you got to see people that you'd never heard before. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, Pauline Hanson, I hear you, Twee. It's just like, how does mainstream media keep putting her in the headlines, but not us? Like, why? And that's why it's so divisive, is that, is Australia racist? Like, if you keep promoting someone to stand up in Dancing with the Stars and dance, or sit, or watch her climb up Uluru and be disrespectful to our First Nations, then what are you actually trying to say, like, mainstream media? So, yeah, I want to vomit with you too.
Now, Diana, something that I thought was interesting that you mentioned was your reaction to Pauline Hanson and her presence, and about how, and I think it's a reaction that a lot of people would have had as well. It's this kind of, it's like a knee-jerk reaction to wanting to belong so badly that you kind of reject your own identity in a sense. And it's something that Twee and I have discussed as well, this internalized racism where, like, when you're younger, you all you want to do is you want to fit in, you want to be cool. And if you grew up in an area with, you know, a lot of white people, then you think, okay, they're the majority. I want to be like the majority as well. Like, I don't want to stand out. I want to just blend in. Yeah, it's so interesting that you bring that up because I think so many people would resonate with what you've just said. Like, you know, even in today's age, I know that people growing up in school, they're still going through that identity crisis as well. And it's not until you kind of go through the ringer or you experience racism or whether it's casual or overt, or you kind of, I guess, look introspectively where you, or look retrospectively where you can kind of see how, I guess, toxic it is to think like that. So yeah, definitely think it's so important to talk about it.
Well, can I ask you, mayem ka pick nothing vehicle?
Yeah, big.
Oh, look. I mean, sort of.
Yeah.
It's what do people say? Like Vietnamese mixed with English.
Yes, Vietlish.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why Vietlish is so popular in the world, because she took the name Vietlish.
Diana
just asked us if we can speak Vietnamese.
And Twee struggles with that answer.
You know what? I think it's also, not going to lie, I can speak Vietnamese, but my accent is really, it's very niche because my parents come from an island off the coast of Vietnam. So we sound like people who have come from the mountains.
Yes.
And haven't really associated with civilization. Like, our accent is just completely different. So I can speak Vietnamese.
Yes.
Like, technically I can. But to speak with people who, like, my accent's more close to people from the south of Vietnam.
Yes.
So I have to kind of, like, mentally change my accent as I'm speaking in order for people to understand me. But otherwise, I speak to my parents in Vietnamese.
There you go.
Well, we kind of spoke a bit about your past. And then I know you mentioned your mum kind of got you into the arts. And you did a bit of ballet. That's awesome. Did you stick with that?
No. Well, when your mum's a single mum and having to raise three kids on her own, ballet classes was expensive. Yes.
You know, I found out my mum the other day wanted me to go to ballet classes too. Because I was complaining to her, like, mum, you didn't, like, send me off to, like, any, you know, piano classes or whatnot when I was younger. She's like, I actually wanted you to go to ballet, but you said no. And I'm like, what? I said no to that? Oh my God. Missed opportunity. I could be like on the stage as a friggin' like Australian ballet.
That's it. So you think you can dance.
Yeah, so you think you can dance, you know, all that stuff. But the reason why I bring that up is because I wanted to ask you, your mum kind of introduced you to the arts and it was an introduction. From that point on, did you know or did you always have an inkling that you want to continue this pursuit, or were you ever like coerced into following the traditional pathways that a lot of Asians go down, like, you know, become a doctor, become an accountant, blah blah blah. So what was that like for you?
Well, yeah, I've got a piano here. My mum got me a piano when I was 3 years old.
Oh my God.
So it's in my blood. Like, mum nurtured me into the arts. And, you know, we had karaoke in our home,
yes,
and Paris by Night and Asia.
Ooh, yes.
So these are the cabaret shows. They were mimed. But, you know, even watching Paris by Night, that's how I learned about comedy, because Van Seung and the sketches, like, I would, you know, when, like, back in my day, Hey Hey Saturday was the Saturday you'd stay home and watch TV with your family. But watching Paris by Night and Asia was like gathering the family together to watch something. And I didn't get the singing because lame, but when the sketches came on, oh my God, like, I was like, Vietnamese people are so funny, you know? And so, you know, that kind of fueled my comedy. And, you know, you watch your mum or parents who say the most ridiculous shit and you're like, why is this not captured on film, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous.
You know, it's going to sound so weird, but, like, I guess kind of cheesy now that I think about it. I used to love kind of, like, being around my parents when they were watching those sketches, because it was, like, one of the very few times I'd actually see them genuinely laugh. Half the time I didn't know what the fuck was going on because I can't understand Vietnamese that well. But then it was just, I was just, like, it brought a smile to my face because, It was bringing a smile to their face. Like, they'll be like rolling on the floor laughing, and I'll be like, oh my God, haha, I don't know what's going on, but I'm so happy to see that, you know, you're vibing with this, because they can't really get that same entertainment off of Aussie TV.
No.
Right? So they get all their entertainment off of these, you know, bootleg DVDs that they get from your local, like, dodgy...
Pass from DVD. Auntie to auntie.
Yeah, pass around, you know, they bring over the DVDs, I get it from somewhere. I don't know where they get it from, but, you know, like, that was their source of entertainment. I just loved seeing that. Anyway, yeah. So I digress, but...
Yeah.
No, that's such a cute reflection to E. Don't even feel embarrassed about
No, this is where we're proud. And it's really beautiful that you mentioned that. That's when you saw your parents genuinely happy. It's because they were resting. You know, they stopped working. But in year 10 was the kicker for my mum. She was like, hang on a minute. All this performing. I was in a school band. I was like lead in a school production.
Wow.
I played the Hunchback of Notre Dame. I played male roles. I was like, the bells. You know, I was ducks of drama in my year 12 class. I was the Asian ducks for drama. And I think year 10, my mum was like, okay, no more hobbies. Okay, let's figure this out. Let's recollab. let's refocus. And it was way too late. Way too late. And I think that was the beginning of a massive disconnection to my mum. I spoke to Peter Hallier on the project, and he was so shocked that the person that's meant to be your biggest cheer squad disapproves of what you do.
Mm.
And that hurts. And that did hurt me for a good 8 years. That the one person that's meant to support and say, you're doing so good, keep going, was my mother. Like, she was, my mother was actually the, and I said this in the speech when I got the award, is that I thanked my mum for going against me because it made me work harder to get her approval. And then it actually wasn't about her anymore, it was actually working for me. And that's when the transition happened, when I performed at Miss Saigon, because for years she would walk out of shows or didn't come. And yeah, I talked about it in Alice Pung's book, and kids go, she really walked out. It's like, yeah, she really walked out 2 times. And I saw it. It was like a horror.
Oh, while you're on stage, you saw your mum walking out?
It was during interval, and it was my mum's escape route. I would be outside just hanging out with my cast members, and mum would be walking out, the car driving off. It was a real Hollywood movie, you know, seeing your mum drive off. But yeah, in 2009 I did Miss Saigon the musical, and my mother stayed and watched the whole thing, and she was crying. I still remember it, just pouring her eyes out, because for the first time she saw the reason why my job was so important. And it wasn't so that she could stand up and re-traumatise herself to tell her story, but it was my job to help tell her story. And, that moment for me was when my mother realised, and she's been the biggest supporter and now wants to be an actor on all my shows. So, you know.
I don't know if this is a bit too personal to ask, but do you know why she walked out on you the first few times? Was it she felt uncomfortable or something? Or
look, it took me years to understand why. And you know, as a teenager, so this happened the first time she walked out, I was 16, and I was shattered. I remember feeling heartbroken, like seeing my mum drive off, and it took about another 10 years for me to figure out and go, hang on a minute, if I a Australian speaking person went to watch a show in French and I didn't understand what the hell was happening and everyone else was laughing and you're the one sitting there going, I don't get this, would you be involved in it?
That's true.
Yeah, so I realized that language was a massive barrier and exclusion for my mum.
That's
true. And so hence why Fee and Me is translated by SBS so that the parents can watch it.
That's awesome though.
Yeah.
And it's also, I find it also interesting because like your mum might not have had that much or been exposed to a lot of like plays and that sort of media, right? I mean, I guess we have Paris by Night, but like other than that, you know, what other chances could she have seen an Asian being in a play and stuff? Like it's just foreign
yes.
to her, so she probably wasn't able to see like the value in it.
Well, play theater is a classist thing to do. You know, theater is niched for rich people to watch. So like in Vietnam, I don't imagine anyone in the village to go buy $60 tickets and go that. Watch a show at the MTC or any show. And that's why I think when we did Fee and Me in 2011, the comedy festival, and we had people lining up and paying $25 to see our show, we're like, wow, this is a revolution. That we are getting our people to leave their DVDs at home and to come out and see something. And the beautiful thing was that it wasn't just Vietnamese people coming, but people of Asian background. And also we had South Sudanese. So this is a time when we had a lot of South Sudanese migrating to Australia. And I used to work with refugees and migrants for 8 years. And my workplace brought like 60 kids to come watch Fee and Me. And they understood everything. They saw how hard, they saw the love of the parent. They saw themselves being reflected. That's for me so powerful with theatre, is that you can make a whole room of different cultural backgrounds understand one story. And so that's the power of theatre. But it is a classist thing. It's a privilege. So I think for me, when people came to see Fee and Me, and my mum came to see Fee and Me, and she brought her friends, that was powerful for our community. And I love the web series and that everyone can click on it. But to be, like when Fiona and I co-created and wrote Fee and Me, we didn't expect that to happen. And that's why I've been so driven for the last 9 years to make Fee and Me to a web series, because that was the power that we had. We saw the power that we had, that our community, our Vietnamese people who are so cool, can be stars. It's been hard work, but it's been worth it.
This is something that we probably should have touched on a bit beforehand, but for those that are listening at home that don't know much about Fee and Me and that special project, can you give them a bit of a synopsis on what was that all about, and also about your adventure into that project, and you said that it started off in the theatre and now it's made its way to a web series. Tell us about the process and what that was all like.
Oh my god, I could write a book. Write a book about it. So in 2010, I went to the comedy festival and I watched shows, and I saw Felicity Ward's show. I sat in the back row and I went, wow, she's just telling stories and making people laugh. And then I realized there were a lot of white performers and white stories. So I went home and I was like, Fiona, can we please write about Springvale and about our mums? Because both our mums in the 90s hung out with each other. We're both single mums. And they would hang out and have girls' nights.
That's
so good. And Fiona and I hung out with each other a lot. So we wrote a character, Kim Hung. So Fiona's mum's name Kim and my mum's name Hung. And we combined the two mums together to create Kim Hung. So Kim Hung is not my mother. Kim Hung is not Fiona's mother. But both are mums. And she's like the universal mum that we could stretch and play with. But Fee is the protagonist. Fee is the child. So originally Fee was a boy and Fee played a boy. If you ask anyone who saw Fee and Me, the theatre version, they would say that the combo that Fiona and I had, and we had our drama teacher play all the white roles. Steve McPhail, he was our drama teacher in year 12 and he became a really good friend, so we decided to revive his acting career. Fee becomes a protagonist character where everyone identifies themselves as that younger generation. So we performed it in 2011 at the Comedy Festival, sold out 3 weeks, got 4-star reviews, came back in 2012, did Fee and Me 2, and got 4.5 stars in the Herald Sun, which is crazy for a Vietnamese, two girls from Springvale, you know, like, what the fuck? Sorry, I don't know if I should swear, But no, it was like, okay. I remember Fiona messaging, was like, I think we got 4.5 stars. It was like, hang on a minute, we didn't need to be white and be funny.
Yeah.
You know?
That's amazing. She we got some potential.
And then we did Phil and me because Fiona took a break. And then in 2015, we did an Australian tour and I really pushed for Fiona to do it. So we went to Sydney, Adelaide and did Melbourne. And our last show in Melbourne was with Fiona in 2015. She decided that she was going to retire. She was done with performing and we sold out at the Drum Theatre in Dandenong. We had 350 people watch the show. And that was kind of the end of Fee and Me with Fiona and I. We also, and remember this was a boy character as well, we got invited to perform at Adelaide Asia Festival in 2016 and we auditioned for another male character. We had Peter Nguyen perform as Fee and then we then took it to Edinburgh in 2017.
Wow. If you fancy yourself a sweet, refreshing treat, our lovely friends at Scoopy, Melbourne's go-to bingsy joint, are offering our listeners a cheeky 15% off all their orders at their two stores. They have one in the heart of Melbourne on Guildford Lane and in Glen Waverley.
So just use the code UA15 at the checkout for 15% off. Please note the offer is subject to change, so remember to check in each episode for the fresh new code. Woo! Thanks, Scoopy. We love y'all.
So I was very motivated to get Fee and Me out of Australia. Like, I was so motivated. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, this cannot be just an Australian story and be shut down. So we were very gung-ho motivated. But if we backtrack, this is what I'm telling you, it's a book. So in 2014, I was like, we need to make Fee and Me touchable, like clickable. And she said, all right, let's crowdfund money. And I was like, all right, let's do $10,000. I think that's how much you make a web series for, $10,000. So I sung karaoke songs for $25 for 30 days.
Oh, my God.
And mind you, I was going through a breakup. So that whole month healed me.
Dude, Vietnamese breakup songs or Vietnamese songs are depressing as shit. Well, I got some sad ass shit out there.
Well, just letting you know, my Vietnamese isn't great, so it's all English songs.
If you ever Google translate it, there's some heartbreaking stuff out there, but it sounds so good. It sounds so beautiful, but you never would have known.
I reckon it'd be great for TikTok to do that, like sing Vietnamese songs.
Diana, I need to know. I think the people also really want to know what were these karaoke songs? What were these songs that you were... What was on the playlist?
Well, lick my neck, lick my back. Was one. There was a lot of let it go, killing me softly. So that was a good breakup song. But then I did it again in 2018 because we realized $10,000 wasn't enough. And we had now had $28,000 and that was enough because to make a web series, you actually need $200,000.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Wow. Okay. Well,
yeah, I didn't know that. I just raised $10,000. I was cheapo.
No one told me.
I was Vietnamese, you know. We just do it for free. We just get our cousins to film it, do a little on a Canon camera.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yes. I would have done that.
Yeah. It's a lot. You know, keep it easy. But, yeah, in 2018, we had no more money because all that money was spent on filming Fee and Me. And that's when we hired Chi Nguyen. There's a difference between theatre and film. So in the theatre, we had a female playing the boy role. But then when it came to writing this web series, we realised that maybe that Fee could be a girl or boy. So we did auditions in mid-2017. And then Chi walked into the audition and blew it away. And I messaged Fiona that night and said, I think we have to change Fee to a girl. And that's why Fee is a girl. And so, yeah, yep. In 2019, we received extra $52,000 from Screen Australia because we showed them proof that we could do it. And that was still $100,000 less. But we did it. 2019, June 16th on World Refugee Day in a full cinema room at the Nova Cinemas here in Lygon Street, we released Fee and Me. to awesome. Our community that had been waiting for 9 years. And we had all these people who had given us that $28,000 waiting. And you know how people are when they give you money. They don't let you forget that they've given you money.
Okay, it's like, you know, investing into like a Kickstarter or something and not receiving any info back.
Oh, man,
for 9 years.
Yeah, I got messages from people with like keeping me accountable. It's like, hey, how's the web series going? And I was like, guys, it's coming, it's coming. And that was the awful pressure of being the creator, but the person who was producing it. It was just a lot of pressure. A lot of tears happened.
Isn't it so baffling that you guys got 4.5 stars for your theater version, so much good feedback response to it, yet it took so much effort,
took so long
so long and so much effort into getting the web series up. You'd think that, like, haven't you proven yourself enough? Like, damn.
And this is unfortunate about funding. And like, we could have gone to Screen Australia and said, hey, could you fund our web series for $20,000? And this is the tough thing about diverse people who want to get money, is that they need a track record, you know? They need to prove it to us, like a folio. So theatre is one thing. So we've got a track record in theatre. But Fiona and I had never written a web series. We had to Google how to write a web series script, you know?
Okay. And I guess it's different.
Yeah, and then so, you know, we were newbies again, you know? And that's the problem with the industry, is that we were toddlers all the time. I have to say, it's hard when the funding bodies are white institutions that give money out.
I feel like we have to jump through more hoops.
It's a circus, isn't it? Jump through more hoops, like a circus. Here, show us that you can do it. Show that you can get the audience. That's why I didn't go to Screen Australia, because I knew I had to jump hoops for them, and it was actually easier for me to sing karaoke to my community and get them to give me money.
It worked.
It halfway worked until I had to get more money. Yeah.
Diana, another huge part of your amazing resume is your presence on LinkedIn.
I know.
And I see a lot of these Dancing Diana videos, and I think something that you say a lot is to be joyful.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk to us a bit about this platform and
your rise
on here?
Oh, look, it was all accidental. So String, who was the one who got me to crowdfund for Feed Me 2014, she's a geek. So she tests betas for tech companies. And in 2017, she was asked to test out LinkedIn. And then she saw how big it was, and she's like, and she's a good friend, I have to say. Like, and that's why I love about her. And more Vietnamese people need to be like her. She brings people up with her. So instead of like, and this is what I say, instead of like going conquering by herself, she was like, Dee Dee, get on. Get on, because I promise you. And I was like, dude, I need to be on YouTube, not LinkedIn. And then this one day in October, I flooded my mother's house with laundry water, and I decided, well, what do? I dance. So I started dancing the laundry water, uploaded onto LinkedIn, and went viral. And so then I decided to double down. And this is the word, you double down being Asian, you double down on dancing, and that's what I did. Doubled down on Dancing Diana, and for the last 4 years I've grown a very niche community on LinkedIn. And if you are listening going, isn't LinkedIn a professional platform for CVs and looking for a job? You are correct. And
that's the same LinkedIn.
Yes, the same LinkedIn. And, and this is the kicker. In 2019, I was invited to LinkedIn head office in Silicon Valley.
Oh my God.
So I did a US tour. I did 7 cities in the US for 3 weeks and did Dancing Diana in each city.
Oh my God.
And I had people from Dallas, New York, Toronto come and dance with me. And then LinkedIn were like, can you come in? And they gave me a tour. I have access to LinkedIn Live. And hence this is hence why I have the show, the Snortcast, which I started last year during the pandemic, was that I was able to use LinkedIn as a platform to talk about comedy and process in a platform that doesn't talk about the arts or process. So, you know, but I felt like, you know, I could have been successful on TikTok and I still dream of that. But
you can make it, I believe in you.
Because the growth of everyone on TikTok last year was amazing. But crazy. But for me, I felt like at the stage of my career, so when I joined LinkedIn, it was 4 years ago, it was like early 31, 32 years old. I really needed LinkedIn to be in my life because I needed to now make money and I really needed to change my mindset. And when I say mindset, it was taking out the poor art person and stop shaming myself. I felt like for most of my career and of my personal life, I have used shame as a driver to do things. And because of LinkedIn, I have met people who say, what if you took shame out of your life? How much better would your life be? And that's what happened last year in 2020. I have a spiritual coach. I worked with a healer and I worked with a pleasure therapist in changing my mindset in what I've been trained for so long to live with. Mm. So I have to say, LinkedIn has been a lifesaver.
LinkedIn was your catalyst for change.
Yeah, it was. It was like...
There are so many great minds out there. It's incredible. It is a platform to bring together people with crazy CVs.
It's elevated thinking. And I really suggest to you too, if you want to get on LinkedIn, let me know, because we need more Asians on LinkedIn, because that's where the money is. It's the richest platform. It's where CEOs are, entrepreneurs are, small business people, creative entrepreneurs are creating, always creating. And look, there's other platforms too, but yeah, the switch for me was, ooh, I can do this and make money and be healthy in my mind. Yeah, so that was the key.
That's interesting. Like, I always thought LinkedIn wasn't a place where you could post like that sort of personal stuff. Like, I keep it so separate. Like, this is my career, like, and then this is like my TikTok life. It's just like completely two separate things. Yes. But yeah, I never imagined LinkedIn space could be more of like a actual social media space rather than purely like for career.
I can tell you why it became what it is now. Microsoft bought it in 2017 and wanted a social media platform that had 600 million profiles. So they bought LinkedIn and then put LinkedIn video and then transformed the CV boring platform into a personal branding platform.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dancing Diana is a personal brand. The Snorkcast is a personal brand. Keanu is part of my personal brand. So everything I create is part of my personal brand. There's an intention and has longer form. Before LinkedIn, I was creating work every 3 months. Mm-hmm. And I had to restart. But now everything has a long-term plan.
You're very smart.
Talk to me later. Talk to me later.
All of these amazing achievements and things on your resume has led you at the top spot in the 2021 Asian Australian Leadership Summit's list of the 40 under 40 most influential Asian Australians. Okay, that was a mouthful, but full of amazing adjectives and words there. What was that like? I think I came across this awards last year actually, and I was looking on the website and I was like, oh my gosh, like, it's so cool to see all of these different people involved. And then, yeah, to hear that you won it this year is absolutely amazing. Tell us what it was like.
Well, I went to the first award in 2019 before the pandemic. It was at the Melbourne State Library and I came as a guest. And it was so exhilarating and exciting that there were powerful Asians in the room, a collective Asians who were killing it in their careers. I didn't sign up for it. Actually, I don't know if you know a comedian called Lizzie Hu from Sydney. She actually messaged me and said, you should apply for it. I'm nominating you. but you have to fill in the form.
There's always a catch.
There's a catch. And like, I got the phone call from the summit and I thought they were calling me to tell me that that there was a full category and I should try out next year.
Oh my God, no.
Like, seriously, because we were just about to hit into this lockdown, the sixth lockdown, right? And I was now in my head going, I don't know if this career I picked is right anymore. No. Like, the arts career. Like, we just had comedy festival, we're performing live, we're back on stage, we were recovering from what happened to us last year, and then this lockdown happened again. No. And it was like, I don't know if I should just give up the arts and just become a LinkedIn influencer full time, you know? But then, yeah, they said, no, actually, you've got the award and you need to do a speech. And I was like, And I cried on the phone because it's tiring. It's tiring being Asian Australian. Yeah.
It's like what we said before, you've got to jump through more hoops, just existing in general. You already got to jump through more hoops. It's like, damn, give us a break.
Well, that's the thing. Like, for my particular field, you need to show up to be seen. Like, you could be a scientist and be in your laboratory and change the world without having, you know, coverage. You can just win a Nobel Prize, right? But to be an actor or a writer or a comedian, we have to stand up on stage and keep standing up and keep standing up. And there's a point when you keep standing up and telling the same stories. There's a point where you get really exhausted by it. And I was exhausted. Yeah, I was so tired. But I am grateful for this award because the Oz Asian Leadership Summit, they collaborate with the ABC this year for the awards. And I have to say that's been a win for me, is that more people have gotten to see me in my work. So I've been very lucky that I've been able to leverage that. But then you have someone put Pauline Hanson on a podcast to talk about what's her favourite food. You know, what about us still?
Chuck me on the motherfucking
podcast. Not just me, but other people. Yeah. And this is the problem I find so frustrating. It's a toxic world that we're part of, is because we've become so tokenized that the same people keep being used again and again. So you're going to have a hierarchy of the top Asians that keep getting the coverage, but then these people on the bottom have to keep standing up, keep standing up to be seen. And so that was what was so frustrating in my industry, that I was competing with other Asians to be seen. Yeah. That's just fucked up. It's like Squid Game, really. You know, I have to kill a whole bunch of people. I have to be successful. I have to be jealous that they got that one role on a TV show, that there's one Asian on a lineup show. Like, I had to compete because that's what the system had told me. There was only one spot for me. Yeah. So I try my best to support Asian Australians. And then I feel like the award itself, it was great in acknowledging all these amazing artists, scientists, a principal one for education, lawyers, but we need to keep being visible so that we don't become yesterday's news. Mm-hmm. And that's what they will do to us. They will make us yesterday's news. And then we have to do it again, stand up. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. But do you see how tiring that is?
Yeah, no. I love the way that you painted for us a picture of what the industry is actually like, because it's so true. It is like, as much as you have a voice, you have a platform, you have to keep doing it, because there's just so many people that you're competing with to, like, it's as you said, the system makes it impossible for everyone to be heard.
And it must be so shit, because you don't want to step on your brothers and sisters. You want to bring them up with you, but then the system doesn't allow you to do that, and that must be so fucking heartbreaking. Oh no, I want to say fuck the system.
No, say, fuck,
we
the,
are living
say
in the
fuck
system.
The system. Say fuck the system. One, two, three. Fuck the system. But that's the thing. I am surrounded by talented Asian Australian artists. Artists that deserve to have a salary, to have a job, to keep being on screen. But however, we are just fighting for these one roles written by white people. Mm. And that's why we need more writers. Like, if you want another career, please get into writing.
Fuck yeah.
So I also have the lineup show in St Kilda where I do the stand-up lineup rooms. And my intention was to show to all the lineup rooms in Melbourne that you don't give one spot to an Asian, you can have two spots for Asians. Never really seen, like if you intentionally look at lineups here in Melbourne, there's five guys and two women, three guys and three females, but there's only ever one Asian. That's exhausting and discouraging for anyone who wants to give comedy a go, because you have to fight for that one spot. You have to wait for the next week or that one next week for that one spot. But then I had to do it. I had to set up my own comedy lineup room to show people that you could have more than two Asians on a lineup. Yeah. Anyway, there you go.
You're a badass bitch. That's all I'm gonna say.
I'm definitely badass, thank you. But also overworked.
Yeah.
Put your mental health first.
Yes, definitely. Always.
Thank you for all of your hard work. I know Tiana and I aren't comedians. Yet, maybe, just kidding. We are, Tiana and I aren't comedians,
not
so
yet.
You know, that won't directly benefit us, but there is someone out there, hopefully maybe a listener or another unknowing Asian Australian out there who, you know, your work will definitely benefit. So thank you.
And the next freaking generation that's coming up, you know, because I'm not going to be 25 years old forever. Like, you know, I am transitioning into mother roles now.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. And if we're going to encourage a new lot of Asian Australian performers, and that's why I love Che Nguyen so much, who plays Fee Nguyen. And this is what, as if I had to send a message to anyone who wants to work in the entertainment industry, please go to school. Please dedicate 3 years. Go to VCA, go to WAPA. Just dedicate yourself to the craft. I went to a Q&A with Hugh Jackman, and he said, the years that you have the education is actually the year to internally grow. You get to play with different characters, but you get to know who you are as an actor to play those characters. And that's why when Chi walked in, she had just finished her 3 years at VCA, blew me away because she knew who she was. And that is powerful when you see another actor know what she needs to do in a room. And that's why we had to change Fee into a girl, because we wanted that to be on screen. We wanted the audience to go, she knows who she is. And that's why, she, you know, I say it to Chi and we laugh about it. It's like, she made me a better actor on set because we were both on the same bar. And that's what's so powerful, is that when you have, we can like raise all Asians all the same bar, get up the fucking mountain together. It's a party. And that's what we need to aim for. We need to elevate all of us up at the same time. Yeah.
With all of our interviewees, we always want to ask a question that really underpins and encapsulates the heart and soul of our podcast, which is, what makes you unapologetically Asian?
The first thing I thought was, I love my cheesy karaoke that my mother gave me. Like surround sound, high volume singing. And that's why I love going to karaoke bars, because that's freedom. Like when you can sing your heart out. And this is the thing, right? It just makes you human. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, it's an Asian Australian singing. Like when you sing, it's your heart singing, and there's no colour to it because it's just emotion, right? So when I get to sing in a car, and I got a fine for singing Taylor Swift on the Eastern Freeway 3 weeks ago. Because,
wait, why did you
what?
Because I was driving 20 Ks over the limit. Because I was so involved in it. But yeah, like when I go home to visit my mum in Springvale and I hear her play, you know, Galung or Vietnamese music so loud, it just takes me back to my childhood growing up. And my mother being unapologetic, playing it so the whole neighbours could hear.
Mm-hmm. Because that's my parents.
Yeah. It's like they didn't give a fuck who was listening.
They literally do not give any fucks at all.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You can hear it from miles away. Yes. You drive, because I live in a court. You drive into the front of the court. Yes. You know there's a party fucking going on. And if it's not a party, it's just my mum and my dad singing in the freaking living room, volume on full blast, and they do not give a shit because they are unapologetically Asian.
Yeah.
Like your mum. Like you, Diana.
Well,
Well, we usually give the floor to our guests to talk about any upcoming projects or just give a shout out to their social media platforms or anything that they would like to share with our listeners. So
awesome. Well, luckily in 2020 during a pandemic, I decided to streamline all my social media handles. So you can find me at Real Diana Nguyen. I also have the podcast called The Snortcast. If you've been counting how many snorts I've done, just message me. You might win a prize. So you can find The Snortcast on all your favorite podcast channels. And next year, my play, Lorinda, that I've co-adaptated with Petra Caleb, Lorinda is written by Alice Pung, will be on stage at MTC. So amazing. I encourage you to watch out for ticket sales. It is the awesome cast that you could find to perform this play. So I'm very, very excited. And Chasing Keanu Reeves is going all around Australia next year.
So. Oh my God, yes. Yes.
That's it. There's more, but that's all I can tell you right now.
You just have to keep an eye on her socials.
That's it. At Real.
Real Dan.
At Real. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Diana. It has been an absolute pleasure to get to know you.
Thank you.
And just hear your story. I feel so inspired. I feel like, you know, just going out there and
taking on the world.
And taking on the world. Thank you so much.
Up the system.
But you need to take up the world too. Yeah, the batter needs to be in multiple passing. So you guys keep doing what you do. Double down. And it's so great that you've, you know, kept going with it because it will pay dividends.
Finance
keep going.
Speaker, love it.
LinkedIn speaker.
Well, thank you so much, guys. We hope that you've enjoyed this episode. We had so much fun with Diana on our Wednesday evening. If you liked the podcast and you liked this episode, please remember to subscribe or follow us on your favorite podcasting platform or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. And also share it. If you've given it a listen, you like it, share it on your socials and spread the word.
Yes. And you can also find us on social media as well. We're mainly on Instagram at unapologeticallyAZN. And we also have a website as well. If you just Google Unapologetically Asian Podcast, you'll be able to find us. Thank you again, Diana, for joining us.
Thank you.
And we hope everyone has a lovely day or night wherever you are.
Bye.
Bye.